Shalom, welcome to Ash JTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Ben Dov, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Harav Meir Kahana, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, we saw this week, again, the folly of Israel's appeasement policy toward her Arab Nazi enemies, and also toward Barack Hussein Obama, John Kerry, and the anti-Semites of the world that pressure Israel to commit suicide. We saw the folly of appeasing Israel's enemies. Israel responded to Hamas terrorist missiles being fired at Israeli cities. 80% of Israel's Jewish population, 5 million Israeli Jews, are forced to run to shelters on a regular basis. Their lives are completely disrupted. All of Israel is being disrupted. Her economy, their lives. And more than 60 Jewish soldiers fighting for their country have been murdered unnecessarily in this war. Yes, unnecessarily. Those casualties could have been avoided if the Israeli government was not tying the hands of the soldiers when they go into battle. But this week, Israel responded in the usual wimpy way to Hamas missile attacks, and 10 children were killed at a UN school because they're firing from the UN post, from the UN school. The Israeli soldiers trying to protect their lives and protect their communities fire back at the source of the missiles. So they fired at a UN school where 10 children were killed. The children were deliberately placed there and the missiles were deliberately placed there by the Hamas terrorists to cause those casualties. But the whole world, led by Barack Hussein Obama and John Kerry, and the Jew-hating news media, the whole world right away blames Israel and condemns Israel. Israel's being condemned for Arab Nazi civilian casualties. In other words, Israel is not allowed to defend herself. Not allowed to fight back, even in the wimpiest way. The world doesn't accept it. And Israel herself is responsible for this because the Israeli government continues to feed into this notion that the Arab Muslim Nazi civilians in Gaza are innocent. They're innocent civilians. The Arab Muslim Nazi civilians in Gaza support Hamas. They elected Hamas overwhelmingly in a free election that was held there. They support Hamas according to polls that have been taken. They almost unanimously support Hamas. Even the Arabs, forget about the Arabs in Gaza, the Arabs who are Israeli citizens vote 95% for Arab political parties that call for the destruction of Israel. Are people who favor Nazi genocide innocent? Are people who enable the mass murder of Jews innocent? Are people who are working, and that includes the Arabs in the land of Israel, they're working to destroy Israel and commit another Holocaust, they're innocent? Is it wrong to do unto them what they want to do unto the Jewish people in self-defense? In order to survive? And Israel isn't doing 0.1% of what Israel is capable of doing. What Israel's doing is a joke. Those who support Nazi genocide are not innocent. If you support Nazi genocide, you're a Nazi. If you support Hitler and the Nazis and want another Holocaust, you're a Nazi. If you support the terrorists that want to destroy Israel, you're a terrorist. the Arab civilians in Gaza are terrorists. They are Nazis. They want genocide against the Jews. They knew what they were doing when they invited Hamas into their homes and their mosques and their schools and their hospitals. When they elected Hamas, they knew exactly what they were doing. They've known what they're doing for more than 100 years as they seek genocide against the Jews in the land of Israel, as they adhere to a religion that says that all non-Muslim infidels must be exterminated. They know exactly what they're doing. They're not innocent. They don't deserve sympathy or compassion or mercy. And the fact that they're being killed, all of them being killed, is entirely because of their own actions in supporting Hamas, in electing Hamas, in inviting Hamas into their communities, and because of their own actions in calling for the extermination of the Jews. It is these Hamas civilians, and the Arab civilians in Gaza are Hamas civilians. These Hamas civilians are responsible for their own deaths. Now, if we were in power, Israel would also be condemned by Obama and Kerry and the UN and the European Union and the whole world. The whole world will be condemning us as well. Which happens anyway, even when Israel doesn't respond, even when Israel is appeasing, as we see now. The whole world always condemns Israel and the Jews. But if we were in power, at least we would solve this problem. Our beloved leader, Harav Meir David Kahana Zecher Tzadik VeKadosh Livracha Hashem Yikom Damo. Our beloved leader, Harav Kahana, may God avenge his blood, said when the first intifada, the first Arab terrorist intifada broke out, he said, if I'm defense minister, in 2 days, there's no more intifada. I will stop the intifada. Now, the intifada, of course, went on for years. But he said, if I'm prime minister, if I'm defense minister, in 2 days, there's no more intifada. And everybody understood what he meant. If we are elected to power, in 2 days, there are no more missiles from Gaza. In 2 days, we will solve that problem. We promise. Furthermore, we will permanently solve the problem by removing the enemy of Israel from the land of Israel. We will remove Israel's enemies from the land. And that will permanently solve the problem. Will the world condemn? Will the world be upset? Yes. But dozens of Jewish soldiers won't be murdered. 5 million Israeli Jews won't have to run to bomb shelters on a regular basis and have their lives disrupted, and really the survival of the country is at risk because of this. And Israel won't be under the threat of a nuclear holocaust, because we'll also take out Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. We would destroy that as well. Obama and Kerry and the UN and the world would scream and yell, who cares? Who cares? They can go to hell. And I would say that as Prime Minister, that they can go to hell. And they will. Make no mistake about it, they will go to hell. We will do what we have to do to defend the Jewish people and to defend Israel. Again, as our great leader Harav Kahana always said, when Jews are exterminated en masse in a Holocaust, when over 6 million Jews are murdered, when 2 million Jewish children and babies are murdered in the Holocaust, they have Holocaust museums that they set up for us. And they have a moment of silence in their parliaments and in Congress to commemorate the Holocaust. And they set up a Holocaust commission for us. They love when there's a Holocaust. When there's a Holocaust, they love to see that. Then they love us. When we're in gas chambers and ovens, they love, then they like us. That's the type of Jew they like, the Jew that goes to the gas chamber and the oven. That's a price we're not willing to pay. We're not willing to pay the price of even a single Jew being murdered in order to appease the anti-Semites. You can't appease them, of course. But we're not willing, even if you could, we wouldn't pay the price. As Harav Kahana always said, better an Israel that is hated by the whole world than an Auschwitz that is loved by the whole world. We would rather have a strong and safe Israel that the whole world hates than an Auschwitz that the whole world commemorates and loves. And for those Jews who would rather have Auschwitz, for those Jews who are willing to let their fellow Jews be murdered, you can die. You can give your lives. That's fine. You can go kill yourselves. But we want to live. And we want our fellow Jews to live. We want our brothers and sisters to live. And we want victory against the enemy. We want the enemy out. Out of Israel completely. And we want victory against the enemy. And let Obama and Kerry and the UN and the European Union condemn and scream and yell. You know, when they're condemning and screaming the loudest, that means we're winning. Because that means they're frustrated. They're upset when we're winning. Let them be frustrated. Let them choke on their frustration. If you want an Israel that doesn't sacrifice her soldiers, that doesn't force millions of her citizens to live in bomb shelters, that doesn't surrender Jewish land and expel noble Jews from their homeland in order to hand the land over to Muslim Nazi terrorists, if you want an Israeli government that tells the truth to the world, Arab civilians that support the terrorists are terrorists. There is no Palestine. There are no Palestinians. There is no Palestinian people in the suffering of the Palestinians. There are no Palestinians. They're part of a huge Arab world, and they have dozens of countries they can go to. And we'll make sure they do go there if we're in power. The bad news is all of Israel's leaders are terrible and all of Israel's politicians are terrible and the Israeli news media is terrible and no one's telling the truth except for us. The good news is we're now the biggest right-wing Hebrew Facebook page. We are the biggest right-wing Hebrew Facebook page. If we become a mass movement, this is the good news. If we become a mass movement, help is on the way. Help is on the way, and victory will come. Just like we won in the 1948 War of Independence, the 1967 Six-Day War, and Entebbe, we won those great victories miraculously with the help of God. Because we ignored the world, and we ignored pressure, and we didn't give in to world threats and world pressure, and did what had to be done, and we won miraculous victories, and God helped us. Lo, this is a nation that shall dwell alone and not be reckoned among the nations. Hen am levadad yishkon. This is a nation that shall dwell alone. It says in the Torah, when we're willing to go it alone in order to sanctify God's name against the odds, we're willing to go it alone because we believe in God and we believe in the justice of our cause and we're going to fight for survival and we're not going to let anybody tell us we can't survive, that we have to lie down and die. When we do that, we will win. And we'll win miraculously. We'll win again in Six-Day Wars. And if that's what you want to see again, if you want to see the Israel of the Six-Day War, if you want to see the Israel of Entebbe, if you want to see the Israel that wins against all odds, then support us and help us. Because if we become a mass movement, help is on the way. And those great days of sanctifying God's name, they will return. 1,830 likes or members. That's what we had on our Hebrew Facebook page in March. 1,830. We now have, the last time I checked, 26,324 likes or members. 26,324. Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. It's a miracle. I didn't expect us to get this type of response, but it may be because of the emergency situation. We may not, if this thing is temporarily resolved with another ceasefire and the people of Israel don't feel like they're under this tremendous threat again, it's possible we won't grow at this enormous pace. In the long term, we may not continue to grow at this type of pace. I don't know. I hope we do continue to grow at this pace, but I don't know. But I do know that having over 26,000 members in a country of 6 million Jews is already impressive. And if we have 100,000 or 200,000, we're a mass movement. We can't be ignored. And we will be able to change the thinking of many Jews in Israel, to wake up many Jews in Israel. And if we wake up Jews and change Jewish thinking and build a mass movement that will save Jewish lives and save Jewish souls, that will make a new situation, that will create a new situation in Israel and will change Jewish history. And so, we need your help. I appeal to all my fellow JTFers, help us as quickly as possible become a mass movement. We're on the way, but we need your help to do it as quickly as possible. You see with your own eyes every week. You see the Baruch Hashem, thank God, you see the wonderful results. But we need much more. We need to do it much more quickly. And so when you see us put up videos in Hebrew and English, please like and comment and share those videos on Facebook, on YouTube. Help us with those videos. Help promote those videos. We also want to promote our English language Facebook page. We need a strong English language movement as well. Thank God we have people like the great Dan Ben Noach who help us with that. And by the way, our English language Facebook page is growing. We have 1,600 plus members there or likes there. We're growing there. It's not going to be the same as the Hebrew, because in the Hebrew we're advertising, and because in Israel the situation is so urgent, it's a life and death situation in Israel, so obviously the English page is not going to be able to compete with the Hebrew page. But we want to gain as much support as we can in both the English and the Hebrew. So please, when you see our videos, or see our posts, when you see us posting on our Facebook pages, like, comment, and share. By the way, if it's a Hebrew video or a Hebrew post that you want to share, we usually include an English explanation. Please make sure you copy and paste that English explanation in as well if you're doing it on English language pages, because otherwise people won't know what we're saying in Hebrew. And on our forum, on our Facebook pages and on our forum, we need good posts and we need good threads, so that people will want to become involved with us, so that people will want to join us. And our biggest downfall was the biggest downfall for Rabbi Kahana. It was the biggest downfall for Jabotinsky and the Jews that wanted to prevent the Holocaust. The Holocaust could have been prevented if Jabotinsky supporters had had enough money. But they were simply drowned out by the Jewish establishment, by the Jewish leaders that betrayed the Jewish people and that made the Holocaust possible. The Holocaust could have been prevented. The State of Israel could have come into being much sooner, if only the Jabotinsky people had had the financial support they need. Rabbi Kahana would not have been banned. He could have become prime minister if he had had millions of dollars donated to him at the time when he was banned, and could have fought back the way he had to fight back, the way it was necessary to fight back. Because the majority of Israeli Jews did not agree with banning him and allowing the Arab Nazi parties that call for Israel's destruction to continue to run. Most Israeli Jews knew that that was outrageous and did not agree with it. But he didn't have the funds to organize and to fight back appropriately. And so we saw the terrible consequences. We need financial support to make this happen. We have a chance now, a chance to do what we dreamed of doing, to finish what Rabbi Kahana started. We have a chance now. Help us succeed. Help us do it. Checks, money orders, and cash donations made out to our post office box make a huge difference. A huge difference. You're directly reaching Israeli Jews with the message. If you ever said, oh, I wish I could just tell the Jews of Israel, what are you doing this for? What's going on? You have a chance to do that directly with us. With us, you can do it directly. You reach them with the message. And you see that we're reaching large numbers of Israeli Jews. You could see it with your own eyes. Just look at our Hebrew Facebook page. And for every Jew that joins our Hebrew Facebook page, obviously there are many, you know how people are, only a certain number join at first. You know how this works, you know how advertising works, you know this is human nature. For every Jew you see, for the 26,000 plus Jews that have joined our Hebrew Facebook page, our advertising campaign is reaching hundreds of thousands. Don't you want us to reach millions? And then we'll have hundreds of thousands of members, God willing? Can you imagine? Imagine how good that would be for Israel and for the Jewish people. How healthy that would be. That finally self-respecting Jews who don't compromise, who are principled, who are idealistic, who stand for the truth, who believe in the justice of Israel's cause, who know that Israel is right and the Arab Muslim Nazis that want to destroy her are wrong, who believe in God. Wouldn't it be wonderful if our representing those values, if we became a mass movement like that, wouldn't that be wonderful? You see that we're on the way, Baruch Hashem, thank God. Help us. Help us. We need as much financial support as necessary. And if you prefer, for convenience sake, to do it with your credit card online, it's the same for us, it's the same thing. Makes no difference if you want to send a check, money order, cash donation to the post office box through the regular mail, or if you want to do it by going to our Hebrew main page, hayamin.org, hayamin.org. On the Hebrew main page, go to the top of the page, and you'll see the donate button in English. You click on the donate button, and in a few minutes, you can conveniently with your credit card donate online through PayPal. Help us. This is a critical time. This is why we were put into this world. We were put into this world to make this a better world. We are challenging the injustice and the weakness and the appeasement of both self-hating Jewish leaders and of the anti-Semites from around the world that hate Israel. We are the challenge to the injustice. We're the answer. Make that challenge, make that answer, that movement stronger so that we can sanctify God's name. Help us. And God bless and thank the great I thank the great JTFers who have been helping us. All right, now we're going to go to our many questions from our great JTFers this week. And we start off with the great Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, "One, Muslims use hadith that one must honor his mother three times more than father to claim that Islam elevates women's status and that neither Judaism nor Christianity give honor to mothers at all. Thoughts?" Islam honors women's status by cutting off their clitorises? By saying you should beat your wife and even kill her if she disobeys you? By saying that women will go to hell because they're always complaining? Of course, you understand why women would complain in the Muslim world. Look at how they're treated. They're treated worse than cattle. Islam honors women by wrapping them in tents, that crazy tent they wrap around themselves in the brutal climate of the Persian Gulf where it's 120, 130 degrees. That's how they honor women? Did Mohammed add this on purpose to cover up general misogyny of Quran and Hadith? Is Smash Islam asks. Whatever he added or didn't add, you know, the schizophrenic insanity and psychotic ranting of the Quran and of the Hadith, it's just insane. It's an insane, these are insane books written by insane people. This is the product of a deranged mind. And he can never cover up what the Quran and the Hadith stand for. Women are slaves, are worse than slaves in Islam. Subject to rape and killing and murder. When a woman is raped in Islam, in the Muslim world, when women are raped, they are executed. They're the victims. The rapists. The rapists get off scot-free. And the women, the woman who was raped is blamed. It's called honor killings. The family has been disgraced because the woman is raped. And so the family, their own families, murder them. Brutally murder them. Cut them to pieces or stone them to death. Brutally murder them. Islam elevates. That's how they're elevating women. There has never been a crueler, more evil religion on the face of the earth. There has never been a crueler, more evil group of people on the face of the earth. Now Smash Islam writes, two, where did beyond absurd myth that medieval Jewish women went to Muslim courts for divorce and that Judaism permitted divorce, women to divorce under influence of Islam come from? I read it numerous times in books and essays by self-hating kikes. They credit Islam for what Judaism did. Isn't this the most cruel form of anti-Semitism, self-hatred imaginable, unquote. Smash Islam. You have a category of Jewish anti-Semites who always side with the enemies of the Jewish people. These are the same type of Jews who today would tell us that the Arab Nazis who are against Israel are right. You see this over and over again. You don't have to read books and essays on Islam hundreds of years ago. Just look at it today. These are the same type of self-hating Jews who support Obama, who want Israel to commit suicide, who support the Arab Nazis that want another Holocaust against the Jewish people, who support Hamas and Hezbollah and Fatah and the PLO. These are the same Jewish so-called scholars who never give credit to the Jews historically in ancient times for anything. They make the Hebrews look like they were primitive people, and the ancient Greeks and the ancient Babylonians and all the other ancient people, all the idol-worshipping people, they were the great people. The Jews were morons. We know that the Jews are stupid people, right? We know the Jews aren't intelligent, brilliant, incredibly creative people. We know that. If you study in universities and colleges today, that's what you learn. The Jews were always nothing. It's all the idol worshippers that were the great people. They were the ones that contributed to civilization, and they're the great people. This never ends. Today, those same scholars and so-called professors in universities, they'll tell us that blacks are the great geniuses of the world. The Jews are stupid. The blacks are the great geniuses. Just watch television. The black surgeon has to teach the Jewish surgeons how to do open heart surgery or brain surgery. It's the black surgeon that knows. So, this is the same story that we get over and over again. There are certain hopelessly demented, evil, self-hating, Judenrat Kapo Jews and anti-Semitic Gentiles who will always give credit to evil people, lie for evil people, make up all types of fantasies for evil people, and attack the good people. That's something we see today. And of course, in history books, they're going to do the same thing. They're going to distort history the same way they distort what's happening today. We know the truth because we know that the Torah and the Bible are living today. Israel is living witness, the miraculous victories of little Israel is living witness to the fact that we're right and the self-hating beasts are wrong. But they'll do anything to put down their own people. Anything imaginable. If something's written in the Bible, it has to be wrong. It was added there, it was changed there. Then they found that it wasn't changed with the Dead Sea Scrolls. They found for 2,500 years the Bible, at least 2,500 years, the Bible had not changed. So don't you think they come up with other things then? They will never, never stop. These are the people who, when they saw God part the Red Sea so that the Hebrews could go through and be saved, said, "Oh, that's the wind trend. It's because of the winds coming from a certain direction. That's not God. That's no big deal. That's the way. That's coincidence." And when they saw the Egyptians drown, well, the wind went against the Egyptians. They had bad luck, and the Jews had good luck. It never stops with these people. It never ends. Thank you, Smash Islam. And we now go to our great friend Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, "Dechayim are Russia and Ukraine mere basket cases," unquote. Economically and socially, yes. Economically, they're basket cases. Their economies are always teetering on the brink of collapse. The Ukrainian economy's already collapsed. And the Russian economy is teetering on the brink of collapse. If not for their oil and natural gas sales, Russia would be completely bankrupt. The Russians would be starving, literally starving. Their days are numbered. They are teetering on the brink of collapse, but Russia is very dangerous because Russia has thousands of nuclear bombs. Thousands of nuclear bombs, so they're dangerous. And we see that they spread their nuclear cancer to countries like Iran, and so they're dangerous. They did it in North Korea. The Russians and the Chinese communists, they enabled North Korea to develop nuclear bombs. So they're very dangerous. But their economies don't function. Their economies are a joke. And their countries are dictatorships. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And we now go to our great friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, what do you think is the greatest moment in the history of Israel? Thanks," unquote. Oh, I think the 1967 Six-Day War. In 6 days, Israel defeated the whole Arab world, outnumbered 100-1. On 3 different fronts. In 6 days, Israel quadrupled in size when they were outnumbered 100-1. Where do you see miracles like this? The only place you see miracles like this is in the Bible. And the Jews returned to Israel, and once again, we see biblical miracles. That was the greatest moment in the history of Israel. And we're going to have moments like that again, Joe, if we become a mass movement and if we ever take power in Israel. Be'ezrat Hashem, God willing. And we go now to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, "Please comment, one, Bloomberg and the FAA," unquote. Oh, that self-hating Jew, Mike Bloomberg. Big deal. He flew to Israel. And then when he was there, because Wolf Blitzer of CNN said, "Do you think it's political that Barack Hussein Obama's FAA is banning flights to Israel. Do you think that's political, that it might be political? Bloomberg got hysterical. "I resent the fact that you're saying that our State Department would act politically. I resent, as an American, I resent the fact that you'd say that." Oh, no, the State Department under John Kerry and Barack Hussein Obama would never do anything political. They would never deliberately try to hurt Israel. No, he said it was like a bureaucratic mistake, a bureaucratic snafu. Obama and Kerry trying to hurt Israel? Bloomberg resents that. After all, he supported Obama. He is the lowest piece of garbage, the scum of the earth. with his $30 billion fortune. He uses his money only for evil causes. The scum of the earth. And Dr. Dan now writes, too, Joan Rivers tirade, unquote. Joan Rivers, I think, genuinely supports Israel. I think she genuinely wants to support Israel, and what she said in her tirade was correct, except for the fact that she used the word Palestinian. There are no Palestinians, but she was right. And, you know, she was correct in her tirade. I would love to see her support us. I'd love to see her, because if she really wants to help Israel, she's 81 years old, if she really wants to do something good for Israel, we're the address. We're the address. Because the only way to really get back at our enemies, and the only way to really give our enemies a gift that they'll choke on, is by supporting JTF. But what she said was certainly correct, and I do think she genuinely cares about Israel. 3, Hillary Clinton on CNN said that terrorism is due to Jewish settlements, unquote. Oh, of course. Of course. I mean, this has always been her anti-Semitic view, her anti-Semitic view. She's just a Jew hater. Her mother married a self-hating Jew. Her mother remarried and married a self-hating Jew, and Hillary hated him. He was a self-hating Jewish animal, and Hillary hated him. And that turned Hillary into a vicious anti-Semite. And she's been an anti-Semite ever since. She said settlements, you know, Clinton said on CNN, settlements are a terrible signal. And she said, this is always why I had problems with the Israeli government. She's determined to get Israel to throw all the Jews out of their historic homeland. She wants Israel back in the suicidal pre-1967 borders because she knows it's national suicide, and that's what she wants. She wants national suicide. You saw the video we did where you see her defending Hamas. Hamas had its back against the wall. Hamas had to put its missiles in civilian areas because Gaza is small. You see how she defends all the mass murderers that want to destroy Israel? And she said, and she even mentioned that she was the designated yeller. She used to go and yell at Bibi Netanyahu. Can you imagine the nerve of this beast going and yelling at the Prime Minister of Israel? If I were Prime Minister, could you imagine if she yelled at me? I'd love to see that. I would love to see that. I would tell her, you can yell all you want. We have 200 nuclear bombs. We're going to defend ourselves, and if you push us too far, you'll be sorry. That's what I would tell Hillary Clinton. Let's see if she'd yell at that. Then you know what they would do? They, oh, we got to calm him down. Oh, boy, this guy's crazy. Oh, no, and he does have 200 nuclear bombs. Oh, yay, yay. Believe me, Hillary Clinton would still be an anti-Semite. She'd still hate us, but she would learn to respect us. Because she would have no choice if we were in power. On the other hand, if she's elected president in 2016, God forbid, with the type of weak Israeli leaders we have now, that will be very dangerous for the state of Israel. Very dangerous. Thank you, Dr. Dan, for the great questions as always. And we now go to the great Lewinsky stinks, Dr. Brennan rocks. Lewinsky stinks writes, and I quote, Israel will agree to Hamas's demand that it lift its pathetic blockade, unquote. Lewinsky stinks, of course. You're right that the blockade is already pathetic. What blockade? They get free electricity, free water, free food, free medicine, free housing, free education, billions of dollars in aid. That's a blockade? That's some blockade. I know a lot of Israeli towns and cities. I know Israeli towns and cities. The Jews of Israel would love to get a blockade like that, where they're getting everything for free. What a farce! It's a farce. It's a farce. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, but by the way, what Hamas really demands is that Israel allow all the weapons to come in freely. That's really what they want. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, are Israelis that care for Arab civilians, quote-unquote, capos? Unquote. Israelis that care for so-called Arab civilians are endangering the lives of their fellow Jews and are betraying the Jewish people. To help the enemy, to help the enemy of your people, to help the Hamas so-called civilians, is betraying the Jewish people. It is sick and disgusting and depraved. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, when will Buchanan croak, unquote. Well, Pat Buchanan, the Nazi, is 75 years old. Thanks to Jewish doctors, whom he hates, who invented all of these great, who had all these great medical advances, thanks to the Jewish doctors, even though he had a heart condition, and he had blocked arteries, they were able to save him. Years ago he had this. He would have died, if not for the Jewish doctors, he would have died many years ago. And of course Gentile doctors also contributed to it, but Jewish doctors contributed a lot to these medical advances, tremendously. But anyway, this Nazi pig, I don't know when he'll die, the sooner the better, of course. You know, when evil people like this live a long time, whether it's evil Gentiles like Pat Buchanan or evil Jews like Shimon Peres. Shimon Peres is 90 years old. What a curse that is. This is God's punishment. God is punishing us. We're being punished because we don't stand for the truth. And we don't fight for the truth and do what God commands us to do. Pat Buchanan is a punishment, the fact that he's still alive. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. And we now go to the great LKZ, who writes, and I quote, your opinion of the electric cigarette, unquote. I don't believe it. I don't trust it. I don't believe it. The liquid that causes the vapors to come out of that electric cigarette, I believe are harmful. You know, all of these things that people try to beat their habit of cigarette smoking, you just gotta quit. You're not physically addicted for more than 48 or 72 hours. If there are people, when I say you, I'm referring to people out there that are smoking, God forbid, terrible, terrible habit, suicide. It's absolute suicide to smoke. Every puff is suicidal. Every puff is bringing you closer to an earlier death and to a lower quality of life. You are only physically addicted to cigarettes, to nicotine, for 48 to 72 hours, just like you're only physically addicted to heroin or cocaine or crack or methamphetamine or these other drugs. The physical addiction, and there is a physical addiction, the body does react. The physical addiction is 48 to 72 hours. But once that stuff leaves your body and leaves your bloodstream, you're no longer physically addicted. It's all in the head. It's all psychological. If you can get over the psychological addiction, you can clean your body out. You can't clean it out completely. Every puff that someone took already did damage. Some of the damage can be eliminated if you stop now. Some of the damage can be eliminated. But every single puff on those cigarettes does damage, does real terrible damage. The electric cigarette, does it do less damage than the other cigarettes? I don't know, maybe. But it still does damage, and I don't believe it stops the addiction. It continues the addiction. Almost all the people who smoke electric cigarettes also smoke the other cigarettes. They do both. What good is it doing? And I think the electric cigarette itself does damage. People have to stop one day at a time. Go for one day without cigarettes. If you could do it for one day, you could do it forever. Then you do it one day at a time. You say, I don't know, I'm for one day I'm not going to smoke. Just until tomorrow, I'm not going to smoke. And if you can overcome it for 24 hours, you can overcome. In fact, if you can stop smoking for 1 hour, you can stop smoking forever. If you can do it for 1 hour, you can do it forever. When you get the craving, you just say, don't say I'm never going to smoke again. You just say, I'm not going to smoke today. Tomorrow, I don't know. Today, I'm not going to smoke. Then when tomorrow comes, you say, you know what? I'm not going to smoke one more day. And you do it as a challenge. You challenge yourself one day at a time. If you have to do it 1 hour at a time until you get through the day. And then one day at a time till you get through the week. And as you build day after day of no smoking, you can overcome. At first, there's a physical, you know, your body reacts in a certain way. Your body craves. You have a physical and psychological craving at first. So the first several days is the hardest. But then you can overcome, God willing. You can do it. You can do it. We believe in Judaism. That you can do what you want to do. You can do the good things that you want to do if only you really want to do it. If you really want to do it, if you're really determined to do it, you can do it. If you decide that living and being healthy and cleaning your lungs out is more important than puffing that poison, then there's nothing you can't overcome. Thank you, LKZ. And we go now to the great Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, do you have any AA affirmative action stories that occurred on board an airplane? Unquote. Well, nothing really special except for the fact that I remember being on a flight when I was running the JDL, when I was the national chairman of the JDL, and I was flying down to Florida to speak to our Florida chapter, the Florida JDL chapter down there in Miami. And I always ordered kosher meals in advance. You got to order kosher meals in advance on these flights. So I ordered a kosher meal. And I remember, this was on Eastern Airlines, which has since gone bankrupt, thank God. But anyway, this was on Eastern Airlines. I order a kosher meal. And I remember how nasty, they didn't give me the kosher meal, even though I ordered it. They brought me a non-kosher meal. They didn't order it. They said, you're not on the list, you're not this, you're not that. Even though I did order it, and there's no question, I spoke to somebody on the phone, and they promised me. And I remember how nasty the black stewardess was. You ain't on the list! What you be talking about? You ain't on the list! Nasty. Just nasty. And I told her, you know, I didn't want to get into a big thing with her because they can make up stories about you when you get off the plane and they can even have you arrested. You got to be very careful about making scenes on a plane. I just said, when we get off this plane, I'm going to complain about you because you're unprofessional and you're nasty and you should be fired. That's all I said. And then when we got off the plane, I saw her later in the terminal, and I went up to her and I said, you know, I'm filing a complaint against you. She said, I don't care what you do. I said, I'm filing a complaint against you because you should be fired. You should be fired because you're a moron. Now that I wasn't on the plane, I could tell her, you're an affirmative action moron. A brainless moron. And she went crazy. She said, F you, she said to me. She said, F you. I said, that's the only thing. That's the only word in the English language that you understand. You low IQ moron. Oh, she was hysterical. She was so angry. I thought she was gonna hit me, which would have been great. I would have loved it. Of course, I wasn't gonna do anything physical to her because I knew I would get into trouble. But I got her so aggravated. And yes, I enjoyed getting her aggravated. I like aggravating our enemies. I don't like to get ulcers. I like to give them to evil people. I like aggravating our enemies. And now we go on to Benjamin now writes, have you ever traveled on a boat? Do you have any affirmative action stories that occurred on a boat? Unquote. I have traveled on boats, but I don't recall any affirmative action stories on boats. I've traveled on boats. I used to travel to do our show, my radio show. I used to travel every week on the Staten Island Ferry. I don't know if that qualifies as a boat, but it was a ferry. I would travel to Staten Island. I don't recall. I'm sure there were incidents there too, but I don't recall any. I just don't recall right now because that was a long time ago. That was more than 30 years ago. Thank you, Binyamin. And we now go to the great Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, one, do you think that Bibi is a good spokesman explaining to the world? What about Bennett? Unquote. I think they're terrible. They agree that there's a Palestinian people. You immediately lose the argument when you say there's a Palestinian people. That means, oh, there's another people there that means, first of all, that means that Israel is Goliath and the Arabs are David. If it's Israel versus so-called Palestinians, that means Israel is Goliath and the Arabs are David, when the truth is it's the opposite. Israel is David, and the 500 million Arab Muslim Nazis that surround Israel, they're Goliath. Israel's outnumbered 100-1. But that's immediately lost the minute you say there's a Palestinian people. The minute you say this is a conflict between Israelis and Palestinians, instead of saying it's a conflict between the Jews of Israel and the Arab world and the Muslim world. If they would note that the Arabs have 600 times the territory little Israel has, that the Muslims have 3,000 times as much land as Israel has, that the Muslims have 66 countries, that the Arabs have 22 countries. If they would note that and would say there are no Palestinians, there is no Palestine, the Arabs themselves always said there's no such thing as this. Don't you think that would be a lot more effective? Obviously, it would be a lot more effective. It's a lot harder to go against Israel if you really know that this little country is fighting against the whole Muslim world that wants to destroy her. A lot harder to go against Israel then. But because Netanyahu and Bennett accept the main talking points of our enemies, they are terrible. They're a disaster. A disaster. And then the Arab civilians are innocent, which was my opening today. They'll say, oh yes, they're innocent. The Arab civilians are innocent, then Israel really does have a big problem here. But if the Arab civilians are not innocent, if they support the destruction of Israel, if they support the terrorists, that's a whole different ballgame. But you'll never hear them saying that. The only people, Tag Mechir, that will tell the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth, is JTF. Now Tag Mechir writes, and I quote, too, address some Haredim saying we only need to pray, unquote. Oh, really? Well, first of all, if you only need to pray, why do they go to work? Let them just pray. Why do they go to work? Why do a lot of Haredim go to work? Let them just pray and the money will come down from heaven. If you only need to pray, why do they go to the store to buy food? God will deliver the food. Just pray and God will deliver the food to you. If we only need to pray, why do they believe in farmers? Should they be Jewish farmers? Should any Jews do any farming? Why do you don't have to farm. God will automatically turn the wheat into bread. We'll automatically turn all the food and God automatically does it. You don't need to pray. You only need to pray. And even more so when people are coming to exterminate you, to kill you. You're supposed to stand there and pray when they're coming to shoot you and murder you? I want to see Haredim, if Arab terrorists come to shoot them and kill them, stand there and pray. After God will protect you, you know. That's the Iron Dome. We are not allowed to believe in miracles, depend on miracles. We can believe in miracles, but we're not allowed to depend on miracles. this whole philosophy of all we need to do is pray is a chilul Hashem, a terrible chilul Hashem. First of all, we are arrogantly, therefore, demanding from God, we're going to pray and you do everything we ask for. We don't have to do anything. Is that what God told Avraham Avinu, Abraham our father? When he went to war to rescue Lot against four different kings, four different empires? Did Avraham Avinu just pray? Or did he go to war and defeat the enemies? Did Moses just pray? Moshe Rabbeinu, he just prayed? Or did he go and impose the 10 plagues on Egypt? When they were at the Red Sea, Yam Suf, and they started praying, what did God say to them? What did God say to Moses? Stop praying. This is not a time for prayer. There's a time for action. Get into that Red Sea and start walking. And until they did that, the Red Sea didn't part. If they had only prayed, the Red Sea wouldn't have parted. When it was time to conquer the land of Israel, did God say, just pray and I'll whoosh him away? Does God say, just pray against Amalek? Or does God say, you have to destroy Amalek and blot Amalek out? Did Mordechai the Jew in the time of Purim just pray? Or did he go and kill 70,000 Nazi followers of Haman? Did he and the Jews go and kill 70,000 over 70,000 Nazi followers of Haman were killed? Why did they kill him? They should just pray. They don't have to kill him, they could just pray. In the time of Chanukah, why didn't the Maccabees just pray? Why did they go out and kill self-hating Jews and the Assyrian Greek invaders? We should just pray. What a chilul Hashem. How pathetic. How pathetic. Why didn't David HaMelech, King David, just pray against Goliath? I can assure you there were Charadim then praying against Goliath when Goliath was defying the armies of Israel and defying God, and there was this tremendous Chilul Hashem, and he was saying, you're all afraid of me, where's your God? And he was cursing God and cursing the Jewish people, and everybody was afraid to fight against him. Don't you think there were Jews who were praying and saying to God, oh, Shaul, the king was praying? They were all praying. David didn't just pray. David did pray, but he also took out his slingshot and killed Goliath. We have to pray, yes, but we also have to act. We have to pray and we have to act. That's the Jewish way. A Jew that only prays is like a cripple. It's like one leg, like someone walking with one leg. A Jew that only fights and doesn't pray is like a cripple with only one leg. A Jew that is healthy and normal and walks with two legs is a Jew that prays and acts and fights and stands for the truth. That is a normal Jew. And that is true Torah Judaism. Thank you, Tag Mechir. And we now go to the great man who writes, I proclaim to the whole world I will fight Mike Tyson if he crosses the line. Then my butt is kicked by a local punk. How serious is Mike Tyson going to take me, Iran? Okay. Your point is understood. Iran is not going to take Israel seriously because Iran allows a ragtag group of Hamas terrorists to do what they're doing. Obviously, Iran is not going to take Israel seriously. Absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Absolutely. And let's remember again, now that you brought it up, Manch, you give me this chance to bring it up again, Hamas is nothing. And all of this is nothing compared to the danger of those nuclear bombs in Iran, God forbid. We must destroy Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. That is a bigger priority than anything else Israel is doing in Gaza. Thank you, Manch. And we now go to Griffin, who's relatively new on the forum. And Griffin writes, and I quote, American troops have begun towards a complete withdrawal from Afghanistan, or extremists are going to take over again. Unquote. Afghanistan is run by Muslim terrorists who support Iran. They already have an alliance with Iran. They are Iranian supporting Muslim terrorists, the Afghan regime. It is a terrorist-supporting regime. What America did in Afghanistan was a joke. It was insane. America should never have invaded and never have given them tens of billions of dollars. They just should have carpet-bombed and destroyed all of Al-Qaeda and all of the Taliban. They just carpet-bomb and destroy them without losing a single American soldier. No invasion, none of this other stuff. Just carpet-bomb the hell out of them. And that's it. That's what America should have done in Afghanistan. And if they threaten you again, you carpet-bomb them again. That's what America should have done in Iran, to destroy Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. America should not go in and occupy Muslim countries or Arab countries. You don't do that. You just make them pay an unbelievably, unbearably heavy price if they dare to do anything to America, and that's it. Israel, on the other hand, has to liberate the land of Israel. Israel's policy cannot be the same. Israel should liberate the land of Israel, but has to remove the enemy when they liberate the land of Israel. If Israel liberates the land and removes the enemy, that for Israel is the appropriate solution, because Israel already lives in that neighborhood. But America doesn't live in that neighborhood. America doesn't live in the Middle East. It is crazy for America to occupy Muslim countries and have American soldiers get killed. It's also, Israel should also not allow her soldiers to get killed. If you remove the enemy from the lands that you liberate in the Middle East, your soldiers won't be killed. Thank you, Griffin. And we now go to the great Kalman Ben Menachem, who writes, and I quote, Reb Chaim, what do you mean when you say you can't make a civil right out of a moral wrong? Thank you, unquote. It is morally wrong to discriminate against people, against whites, for instance, based on race, because of slavery and all the other things that happened. To discriminate against white people, this generation of whites, because of that, is morally wrong. And they call it civil rights. That's not a civil right. You can't make a civil right out of a moral wrong, out of a moral injustice. You can't make a civil right. You can't turn a moral injustice into a civil right. The same thing with the homosexual agenda and homosexual marriage. You can't turn a civil right. You can't make a civil right out of something that is unnatural and abominable and goes against God's laws and destroys families and destroys society. You can't make that into a civil right. A civil right can never be predicated or based upon a moral wrong. A civil right must be based upon something that is morally true and just. That's what I mean. Thank you, Kalman. And we now go to our friend Super Mentalita, who writes, and I quote, Hi Chaim, what is the JTF statement of Geert Wilders working together with French Front National of Marine Le Pen, unquote. We're against it. I was very disappointed in Geert Wilders. Geert Wilders does support Israel. I think he did in the past. I hope he still supports Israel. But he did support Israel. He did defend Israel. He's made some very good statements in terms of the Muslims. So when he decided to align himself with Marine Le Pen, I was disappointed, because Le Pen and the National Front in France are anti-Semites. They're Holocaust deniers and they're anti-Semites. Now, she claims that she doesn't agree with everything her father said. She's full of baloney. She does interviews and makes statements against Israel. That's all a cover for continuing the policies. The French policies are viciously anti-Israel. She's against settlements. She's against the right of Jews to live in their own homeland. I mean, this is anti-Semitism. After everything the French have seen from the Muslims, they still say that the Jews don't have a right to live in their own homeland. They still say the Jews should hand this land over to the Muslims. That is anti-Semitism. And Geert Wilders should not be working with her. I'm disappointed that he's decided to align himself with her. I think it's a big mistake. Thank you, Super Mentalita. And we go now to the great EB22, who writes, and I quote, "Who do you think will be a worse president for the U.S. and Israel, Hillary Clinton or Elizabeth Warren?" Unquote. I think they're both equally horrific, horrendous. Their policies will be the same policies. They both will demand that Israel commit suicide. They will continue the Obama-Kerry policies. They'll both demand that Israel commit suicide. They will both work to ensure that Israel not prevent Iran from developing nuclear bombs. They will pressure Israel not to strike and destroy Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. So under them, you see a nuclear Iran, God forbid. You see Israel creating a so-called Palestine state, God forbid. Israel going back to the pre-1967 borders, God forbid. Both of them are for all of these things that mean national suicide for the Jewish people. And as far as America's concerned, Hillary Clinton with Hillary Care, she was the originator of this nightmare that we haven't even begun to see the effects yet. This is just the tip of the iceberg with millions of people losing their health care and all the other disastrous things we've seen from Obamacare. That's nothing. It's the tip of the iceberg. Hillary Care was the one that initiated this, and her program was even worse than Obama's. If, God forbid, either one of these nightmares is elected to the presidency, America is finished. I don't see how America could get out of it. You see that they'll issue executive orders, legalizing all the illegal aliens, opening up our borders. It's over. How can America survive that? You're basically opening the door and allowing everybody to come flooding in. That's their policy. How can America survive something like that? And their vicious anti-Semitic, anti-Israel policy, God will punish America. If you have a president that's anti-Israel and anti-Semitic and you vote for those types of people, God punishes countries that do that. You try to destroy Israel, your country will be destroyed. That's what God does. That's what God promises in the Bible. So they are disastrous. Either one of them is disastrous. EB now writes, if both run, who do you think BHO, Barack Hussein Obama, will endorse? Unquote. I don't think he's going to make an endorsement in the race for the Democrat nomination. I think he'll wait. He will endorse whoever the Democrat nominee is, but I don't think in the race for the nomination he's going to make endorsements. I don't think he'll openly, at least, I don't think he'll take sides. Thank you, EB. And we now go to the great Paper Cut, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, I am reading Judges. What is your favorite book in the Bible or Torah? Unquote. First of all, the Torah, we usually refer to the Torah as the first five books of the Bible, because that's where you have the 613 commandments that were given to the Jewish people. We call it Taryag HaMitzvot, which are the 613 commandments. So the first five books of the Bible, out of the first five books, which is the Torah, my favorite book, I would say, is Shmot, Exodus. Of course, I love all five books. I love every word in the Torah. But my favorite is Shmot, Exodus. I love the triumph of the defenseless slaves against the mightiest empire on the face of the earth, and proving to the whole world who God is. It's such a magnificent, triumphant story. That's my favorite book. Now, in the Bible being not just the first five books, but including the prophets and including the whole Bible. Again, I love every book in the Bible, but I'd say my favorite book outside of the Torah in the Bible would be the prophet Isaiah, Yeshayahu in Hebrew, Yeshayahu Hanavi, Isaiah the prophet. His soaring poetry, his description of the Messianic era and of what will come and of what the world will be like, and his the hope that he gives us, and the beautiful way that he describes it, and the truth, and he's very truthful and realistic and condemns evil behavior from both Israel and the nations of the world, and talks and speaks about the punishment and the terrible things that are coming, but he also speaks about the wonderful ending. He describes it so beautifully that outside of the five books of the Torah and the Bible, that would be my favorite book. Thank you, Papercut. I love the rest of it. I love Tehillim. Tehillim are the Psalms of David. Oh, what a great, just fantastic. And all the other prophets. And it's just, I love it. I love Judges, and I love Shmuel, Samuel, Kings, magnificent, Chronicles. Papercut writes now, compare Judges to how people live today. Okay, the book of Judges, to how people live today. Well, there were problems in the day when we had the Sefer Shoftim. Sefer Shoftim is the book of Judges in Hebrew. There were problems. Each tribe had its own rules, and there was no king. There were some serious problems, very serious problems. And you see Israel sinning over and over again. But there was one big difference. Even when they committed sins, and they committed some terrible sins, but even when they committed sins, every time God punished them, they repented when they were punished and returned to God. Every single time. Now, of course, it's a terrible story because, you know, God punishes them, they return to God, and then when God saves them, they go back to sinning again. After, you know, they forget about what God did for them after a while, and then they go back to sinning again. So it's... You know, that aspect of it is it's a terrible commentary on that whole period. But at least every time they had problems with the Plishtim, with the Philistines, or every time they had problems, they would return to God and beg God to forgive them. Now, look at what the world has turned into. Even when God punishes people now, they don't return to him. They continue down the same evil path. So you see that the world has become a much worse place, morally, spiritually. And we see the need for the coming of the Mashiach, for the Messianic era. We see the need, the urgent need. And all of this was foretold that it was going to be like that. Thank you, Papercut. And we go now to... Righteous Sword 007, who's new, relatively new on the forum. I don't see any posts, so I think you're relatively new on the forum. Welcome. Righteous Sword writes, Chaim, what do you think of Hillel Weiss? Unquote. I don't know enough about him. I know he's a professor at Bar-Ilan University. Sometimes I've seen articles in the Israeli media about controversies that he started by saying certain things. He said, for instance, that the gay parades are an abomination and have to be stopped at any price. I agree with him. I think that was a wonderful thing to say. And he also criticizes the anti-religious and those who think that you can have a state without Jewish values and Torah values and religion. So a lot of what I see, I see a lot of what he says is good. But I don't know enough about him to know the whole picture. From what I've seen, the couple of things that I've seen him say, I agree with. But I can't say in general because he may also have said other things. I don't know. He may have said other things that are problematic. I don't know. But from the two or three things that I've seen him say, I agreed with him. And again, he's a professor at Bar-Ilan University. Thank you, Righteous Sword. And we now go to the great secular believer, who writes, and I quote, "Are empty buildings a major threat to Israel? The IAF, Israel Air Force, sure spends a lot of time attacking them," unquote. Excellent point, secular believer. It's all just a lot of show. It's all a bluff and a joke. And that's why we waste the Israeli Air Force on that. It's a terrible, terrible bluff. The buildings will be full, secular believer, if we're in power when we bomb them. We're not going to give them any warnings. America never gives warnings when they bomb enemy targets. And no other country does this. No other country behaves like this. And we will not behave like this either if we're in power. When we're in power, we will destroy the enemy and liquidate the enemy as much as possible. When it's wartime, we will fight to destroy the enemy just like they're fighting to destroy us. That's what a normal, sane country does. Thank you, secular believer. And we go now to our great friend Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, can you discuss Tisha B'Av? And do you don tefillin in the morning on Tisha B'Av? Unquote. Well, Tisha B'Av is the time of year. It's going to be this Tuesday this week. In Hebrew, we say Yom Shlishi. That's how we say Tuesday. It means the third day. Because in Hebrew, we don't use names for days. We say Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi, Yom Revi'i, Yom Chamishi, Yom Shishi. First day, second day, third day, fourth day, fifth day, sixth day. Because we count the day, because the Sabbath is the basis. Shabbat, the Sabbath is the basis of the week, the foundation of the week. And then every other day is the first day after that, second day after that, third day after that. So that's how we say the names. Those are the names of the days in Hebrew. So this Tuesday, in English, if we're going to use the name of the day in English, this Tuesday will be Tisha B'Av, which is Av is the month in Hebrew on the Hebrew calendar, and it's the ninth day of the month of Av. It's the most tragic day in Jewish history by far. Tisha B'Av is the day when both holy temples were destroyed, hundreds of years apart. The first holy temple, and then hundreds of years later, the second holy temple was destroyed, both on this same day. And many other terrible, horrible catastrophes in Jewish history have occurred. The Spanish Inquisition started, and many, many other catastrophes. Many catastrophes in ancient times, catastrophes in modern times. It's the worst day of the year on the Jewish calendar. And that's why we fast on Tisha B'Av. And we deny it. There are five things that we deny ourselves on Tisha B'Av. And one of them is eating and drinking. We don't wear leather shoes. We don't put creams on our skin. Tisha B'Av is a time... And the fifth thing that we do, I mentioned four of them, right? The fifth thing that we do is we don't... husband and wife do not have marital relations on Tisha B'Av. So there are five things we don't do. It's important though to note that when we rebuild the temple, this will be turned into a joyous day. All the fast days will be turned into joyous days and days of celebration. We won't be fasting anymore when we rebuild the temple. So rebuilding the temple turns the sad days into joyous days. That's one of the reasons why we should all aspire to rebuild Beit HaMikdash, our holy temple, b'mehera b'yameinu, speedily in our day. Amen. Now you ask if I put on tefillin, if I put on tefillin in the morning on Tisha B'Av. Tefillin meaning the phylacteries that Jews put on every weekday. In the morning, during the... We pray three times a day. In the morning, our prayer is called Shacharit. And during Shacharit, during the morning prayer, it doesn't have to be put on in conjunction with the prayer, but it usually is. In the morning prayer, we put on tefillin. We put on the phylacteries. I do not put them on Tisha B'Av, because I follow the Ashkenazi tradition. Most Ashkenazim do not. I follow the Ashkenazi tradition because my father, Zichrono Livracha, Alav HaShalom, was an Ashkenazi Jew from Poland, so I follow his tradition. My mother, of course, is a Sfaradiya, she's a Sephardic Jew. But we follow, we go by, if you're half Ashkenazi and half Sfaradi, you go by the father's side. So I follow the Ashkenazi tradition, even though I love both the Ashkenazi and Sephardic tradition. I love them both. They're both beautiful traditions. But you follow the father's side. since most Ashkenazim do not put on tefillin in the morning, on Tisha B'Av, neither do I, what they do is they put it on in the afternoon, during the Mincha prayer. Remember, we have three prayers a day, Shacharit, Mincha, Ma'ariv. We put it on in the afternoon, during Mincha on Tisha B'Av. Thank you, Maimonides. And we now go to the great Chicago Jew who writes, and I quote, with the current war going on, do you think this will change people's minds and go against the two-state solution or won't make a difference, unquote. I think that it does have an effect. I think it has an effect. I think people see that when we gave up Gush Katif and gave up Gaza, look at the results. I think it does have an effect. Will it be a lasting effect? Will it prevent the creation of a Palestinian state? God forbid, which is national suicide. Will it prevent that? Only time will tell. I believe that the answer to that question in many ways depends upon how successful we are. Because we'll be there to keep reminding Jews of what the real lesson is here if we become a mass movement. We'll be there to constantly remind Jews and constantly bring them the facts, the irrefutable facts. So if we become a mass movement, then I do believe it will make a huge difference. And I believe people will learn the lesson. If, God forbid, we don't become a mass movement in time, if we don't succeed in time, then unfortunately the brainwashing of the media and the brainwashing that takes place all the time, I think there's a real danger that that this will not have a lasting effect. So I think a lot of it depends on how quickly we can become a mass movement, God willing. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And I want to thank everybody for another program that I very much enjoyed doing. Until next week, Shalom.